Hi, I'm Carmen LaBurge. Thanks for listening to the podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting. Good morning. So welcome to this Memorial Day edition of Mornings with Carmen. This is the day the Lord has made. We will rejoice and be glad in it. Always a joy to be with you, especially on this Memorial Day. So what have you got planned today in terms of remembrance? How are you going to recognize and acknowledge the sacrifice of those brave Americans who gave their lives to win, preserve, and advance the freedoms and values of this country? That's really the question before us today. And so I just thought I would lead off with a little Memorial Day devotional here, and maybe a little bit of history to get us out the gate. So Memorial Day, as we have come to know it, started sometime just after the Civil War, but until World War II, it was actually called Decoration Day. So it was a day to decorate with flowers and flags the graves of fallen soldiers. Remember those who had given, as Lincoln beautifully said, the last full measure of devotion to win the freedoms that we enjoy and defend our land. So it's a day to remember what those who died in the service of this country really died for. And it is freedom and freedom's cause. So a century and a half has passed since Lee surrendered to Grant at Appomattox, effectively ending what we would refer to as the national nightmare, where some 625,000 Americans lost their lives. It's interesting to consider the lives lost, not only in World War II and more recently in the conflicts in the Middle East, but to consider the lives lost in Vietnam and consider the lives lost right here on American soil during the Civil War. So we have had a number of wars to which we have given over young men and women. And so when we remember today, when we think about Memorial Day, when we consider why this is important, we really need to have a future focus. We need to recognize that Memorial Day is a future-oriented conversation. The future of the United States actually depends on how well we collectively remember and cherish what liberty is and how awful tyranny is and how much we don't want it, right? How much we want the freedoms that we have and enjoy. So as Christians, we are a memorial people. As Christians, we understand the crucial importance of remembering and of recognizing certainly the sacrifice of Jesus Christ upon the cross on our behalf. The sacrament of the Lord's Supper is often talked about as a celebration in memorial, in remembrance. But that is a good place for us to acknowledge that it is the acknowledgement of something that happened at a point in time and a sacrifice that was made, but it also speaks to a time in the future. And so as memorial people, as people who recognize maybe from the book of Hebrews and other places throughout the scriptures. Maybe you would look at Deuteronomy. Maybe you would look at 2 Timothy. These commands to remember and never forget. So we are a memorial people. Let us today be people who remember who we are and never forget what that means. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. We'll be right back. So on this Memorial Day, one of the things that we as a family like to do, we won't be doing it today because we're not at home where we would be able to do this. But one of the things we really like to do is visit the Veterans Cemetery that is just off Interstate 40 at the exit that we take home every single day. So on Memorial Day, actually, the flags have now been out for a few days now because it takes a long time to mark each and every one of those white engraved headstones with an American flag. So over the process of several days, members of our community gather at the Veterans Cemetery and mark each one of those thousands of graves with American flags. And putting those flags out every year is a solemn community act in our little town. And it's an act that takes place in places all across America and actually around the world where Americans are buried following the sacrifices made in times of war. It's a prayerful act of appreciation for those who have made the ultimate sacrifice. It's an opportunity to pray for their families. It's an opportunity to thank God for their life and their service. And I'm always reminded as we every year observe those flags and some years participate in placing those flags in the Veteran Cemetery, I'm always reminded, you know, as you're putting the flag in the ground, I don't know if you would be reminded of this. I am reminded of the Pledge of Allegiance. I'm reminded of the Pledge of Allegiance. I mean, I can't, it's hard for me to see an American flag and not remember the life of suffering and diligence of Betsy Ross. It's hard for me to not remember the time of travail during the days of revolution. It's hard for me to not remember what it means to stand and pledge allegiance to a flag, recognizing that we live in a nation and in a time, but we do so under the ultimate sovereignty of God. And so that's the conversation that I also want us to be having today. I want you to be considering not only the allegiance that you pledge to the flag of the United States of America, but that we as a nation ultimately live under the supreme sovereignty of God. So when we say that we are one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, we are making an aspirational statement about who we are and how we intend to live together. So think about that today. What does it mean? What does it mean to say that we are one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all? What does it mean to make those aspirational statements, and how does it change how we live in relationship with one another? One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The fabric of our indivisibility, I don't know if that's really a word, but the fabric of our indivisibility is often tested. And there are those who seem pretty much bent on tearing this great nation apart. And so here on this Memorial Day, let's dwell for a moment on the uncomfortable truth of our national heritage. I had a conversation recently with an African-American who lives here in my same community about the fact that we don't honestly talk about America's history very often. We talk about America's history, but we don't talk honestly about America's history very often. And I think it's an honest conversation that we need to have, and we need to have the conversation in a non-defensive manner, and we need to have the conversation as people who are committed to the truth and people who are committed to the human dignity of every person, and people who recognize the depravity of sin and therefore the reality of racism. So there's no question that slavery was not right. It was not righteous. There does seem to be a lingering question about whether or not it was, you know, did it somehow in our collective memory okay? And it's not. It's just not. And so as we are considering aspirationally who we are called to be as one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, the conversations about who we were when and who we intend to be in the future, and how we get from who we were to where we want to be to who we want to be is going to have to include a conversation about the reality of race and racism that's systemic in our culture. And you know, as soon as you hear that and then you say back to me, well, I'm not a racist. Basically, what we're acknowledging is the water that we have been swimming in is so clearly racialized that we can't even see. We can't even see the systems that have created generational wealth and generational poverty, that have kept some people in some educational systems and others in others, and access to all kinds of you know, I'll use the word, all kinds of access to what we might consider privilege. And so if we're going to talk about justice and mercy and equity and truth, because we are people of God, then we can't be people who cover up injustice. And so we're going to continue this conversation on this Memorial Day, because it's important to remember who we are and whose we are and the sacrifice ultimately made on our behalf. And that, of course, is going to take us to the foot of the cross. So I'll be back in just a moment. And we're going to talk about what it means as Christians to have the burden of responsibility and the mutual call as reconcilers in a culture that is, in fact, deeply divided. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. I'll be right back.
Lift every voice and sing to earth and heaven. Ring, ring with the harmonies of liberty.
So continuing our Memorial Day conversation here, as flags fly today and we absolutely give thanks and gratitude to God for the men and women of many races who bled and died for the freedoms that we enjoy, you know, we got to talk about what flag is flying over us. And if there's any flag that's ultimately flying over you other than the banner of Christ, then you have to like pause and consider why you are living your life under any banner other than the banner of Christ. And this does get us into a conversation about identity politics. This gets us in the South into a conversation about the Confederate flag. But this also gets us into conversations about all the other flags that we fly over ourselves. It gets us into a conversation about nationalism. And in all of those conversations, I hope that we can be people of faith who are interested in tilling the soil of our own hearts and minds, and not be defensive, not immediately throw up a shield of defense against tilling the soil, plowing the ground that needs to be plowed in conversations with one another about the realities of that which divides us deeply. And it's quite possible that we find ourselves disabled, unable to have the conversations that we need to have today across all kinds of ideological barriers or divisions, because we have not yet had the kind of reconciling conversation that we have to have on this very deep social sin in our country that, you know, we would call race or racism. And you've heard me talk, you know, frequently about the reality that every single human being is created in the image of God. And so we stand on equal footing at creation with people of every tribe and tongue, and yes, every melanin, is that what's in our, I think so, melanin, thank you, Paul Perot, bailing me out there. Melatonin is what puts me to sleep. Melanin is what is in the skin that makes me so fair-skinned that I have to put on sunscreen, and other people not so fair-skinned that they are able to enjoy the sunshine without needing so much sunscreen. So there you go. We stand on equal footing at creation with people of every skin tone and color. And what we hold in common as people who are born of one mother, Eve, you know, you can point to genetics if you want to. I mean, you know, this is one of the places where science actually helps us understand who we are. Well over 99% of what makes me who I am as a human being is shared with people of color as well, right? So what makes us human is that we are made in the image of God. And yes, we all share in that humanity. And yeah, we may have different blood types, but there's only a limited number of blood types. And ultimately, as Christians, we're people of one blood, and it's the blood of Jesus. And my brothers and sisters in the kingdom of heaven who recognized that we not only stand on equal footing at creation, but we stand on equal footing at the cross, and with whom I am going to stand on equal footing in the kingdom of heaven forevermore. That which we share in common, which is the blood of Jesus Christ and his redeeming power, not only over the penalty of sin and death, but over the power of sin in this life, and racism is a part of that. Like, we are going to boldly stand up and declare, you know what? We're reconciled to God in Jesus, and therefore, there is no longer any dividing wall of hostility between us. Male and female, black and white, from different races and nations. That, in fact, I don't even think I'm supposed to say different races anymore. We are the human race. We are the human race. That's it. That's the language we need to, I don't know, recover, adopt, begin using. And so I lift all of this up today because I think that on Memorial Day, we do have the opportunity to positively be patriotic. But I also think that it can bleed over into what I would describe as a negative nationalism. Like, right? It can go beyond patriotism to nationalism. And I want to encourage you to resist that today. I want you to encourage you to resist going from appropriate patriotism on this Memorial Day into some kind of racialized negative nationalism. And I want you to remember who you are and whose you are in Jesus Christ. And I want you to remember that you share more in common with Christians around the globe whose skin color may be different than you share with a non-Christian American neighbor who doesn't know Jesus. Just think about that for just a moment. So on this Memorial Day, one of the things that we as Christians uniquely bring into the national conversation is the reality of a remembrance that goes well beyond, far further back than America's heritage as a country. And so we don't have to be defensive about the sinful history, portions of the sinful history of our own country, because we actually see it in the context of fallenness and brokenness writ large across the face of all of human history, all the way back to Genesis chapter 3. And so let us remember all the way back today to the garden, to God's initial intent, to God's declaration over us of goodness. Let's remember today the fall, and let's remember that because of the fall, there is war. And so we don't glorify war even on this day when we absolutely recognize and remember and honor the sacrifice of those who made the ultimate sacrifice for the cause of freedom and liberty and justice for all. And so today, we lift the stars and stripes as Americans. We lift the stars and stripes as Christians. And when we think about that, I want you to think about the light that we are called to shed in the world that God so loves. Let your light so shine before others that they would see your good works and thereby glorify your God who is in heaven. And when we think about the stripes, I want you to consider that they are red and white. Why is that the case? Well, because stripes are likened unto the stripes on the back of Jesus. And yes, the stripes on the backs of those in our country who were whipped in much the same way. There are some remembrances here that are helpful in our contemporary conversation about reconciliation, particularly racial reconciliation in the country today. So stars and stripes. Are you and I going to shine like stars, even in the midst of a generation that recognizes God not? Are we going to be people who point to not only the stripes on a flag, but to the stripes on a man named Jesus? And are we going to ultimately point people to him on this day of remembrance, on this day of memorial, on this Memorial Day? And are we going to acknowledge that it's by his stripes that we are healed? So today, as you see the flag and you pledge allegiance to it, and you make the aspirational statement that we are indeed one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all, I want you to remember from whom liberty ultimately comes, and that's Jesus Christ, and that God is ultimately the judge of each one of us and of all of human history and of nations which will rise and fall. And so today on this Memorial Day, let us remember and put in their right perspective the stars and the stripes. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. We'll be right back.
I will live what I believe if I'm no one else but me. To remember the freedom's never.
So with college students returning home for the summer and recent graduates preparing to go off to school, we all know the pressure points that young people are facing today. We talk about them frequently here on Mornings with Carmen, and so I thought it would be fun to talk with Shelby Abbott, who does college ministry. He has written a book called Pressure Points, and he and I are going to talk about that here next. So what are the pressures that young people are under today, and how are we, as Christian adults, helping them to deal with those pressures? Pressures come from a myriad of directions. Those pressures can be internal. They can certainly be external. Kids today are facing pressures from social media that many of us obviously did not face when we were at that same stage of life. So let's figure out what the pressure points are and how we can equip young people today to enter into that experience of college and beyond, resisting the pressures that do come, and doing so in a Christ-like manner. Okay, with us now, Shelby Abbott, the author of Pressure Points. Shelby works with college students, and he is offering us a guide to navigating student stress in his book, Pressure Points. Shelby, welcome to Mornings with Carmen.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
So college students, actually people in this age cohort, right? We're not just talking about college students. We're talking about everybody that's sort of in this age band that we would consider sort of college age. So sometimes we're talking about students who are a little younger than that. Sometimes we're talking about people who aren't actively students right now. But that's kind of your area of expertise. And so that's the target that we're shooting at here. What kind of stress and pressure do people in this age range, and people specifically in college, what kind of pressures are they experiencing today?
Well, I think it's a normal type of pressure that any person would go through on a day-to-day basis. But I think it's heightened when you're in college, because there's a number of decisions that you're making at that time that will affect large parts of your future. On top of the fact that being in academics for the first time in a concentrated environment where that's all you're doing as your quote-unquote job brings with it a number of different pressures that are unique to that period of time in your life.
So we're talking with you today because this is actually an arena of real expertise that you have. Talk with folks about your experiences, you know, over time with college students, and why you wrote this book right now.
Yeah, I became a Christian when I was in college, January of my freshman year, and my whole life was turned around in a great way. And so when I graduated from college, it was an easy decision for me to come on staff with the organization called Crew. And so that was back in the summer of 1999 when I graduated. So I've been doing college ministry ever since. So it's been 20 years, which is sad that I'm that old, but it's actually true. I really wanted to write this book because I wanted to write something to myself in college and wish I had that kind of a resource, something that addressed kind of the bigger life questions, like what's my purpose? What does God want from me? What's God's will for my life? Things like that. And then also relationships, not necessarily just romantic ones, of course that, but also what's some good advice on how to relate with my parents during this formative period of time, friendships, things like that. And then where is God in the hard times, the difficult times? I just really felt like there wasn't an all-encompassing guide to really help me at that time. So that was my aim, to really write a book to any Joe college student who walks with Jesus and needs some good wisdom about how to live my life.
So the challenges that college students face today are different than the ones. I mean, if you graduated in 99, I graduated sometime before that. The challenges that that students are facing today are very different than past generations. And I would say that, you know, even 20 years out, we're in a different generation. So 25 years out for me, you know, I'm definitely in a different generation. I am now my friends that I went to high school with, their kids are now in college. And so talk with us about how the pressures are different, particularly, I mean, I think of particularly related to technology, but there's also been some mammoth shifts in culture where, you know, being a Christian was actually kind of a cool subcultural thing to do when I was in college. I'm not sure that's true anymore.
Right. I would agree with you. Technology has changed the game. When 2007 rolled around and the iPhone came out, everything changed in a number of different ways. So that's one of the things. Obviously, I'm writing, like I said, I write the book to myself, but as if I were a college student today. So in light of things like smartphones, social media, different types of ways of communicating with one another, the whole game is different now. And so I really wanted to make sure that I was addressing relevant topics, relevant issues to students who have a smartphone and have probably had one for many years in their pocket. That's one of the things that is culturally completely different. So I think that the issues that people wrestle with are the same issues that have been going on for a long time. I think just technology and social media, texting and stuff like that has forced them to the surface in kind of a new way.
All right. And what you are proposing, what you really unpack in this book are what we would describe as gospel solutions. What do you mean by that phrase, gospel solutions?
Yeah, that's a term that kind of can be vague depending on what your understanding of that is. While I said like the things that people wrestle with are common things, it's one of those subjects, though, that we're going to look to kind of solve the problems of our life by helping to heal the different stressors that happen, the different issues, the different feelings of loneliness and emptiness. And really the solution to those issues in our life is what it means to have a personal relationship with God through the person of Jesus Christ. So that I really try to answer the questions behind the questions, the issues behind the issues. So you might be dealing with loneliness, fear, anxiety, all of those kind of things. And instead of looking for solutions in programs or self-help, we need to look to what it means to have a relationship with God and allow Him to fill us up in a way that nothing else can.
Well, and part of the beauty of that is, first of all, it's true, right? But it's also inexhaustible. I'm never going to get to the bottom of nor exhaust God's grace. I'm never going to Jesus is never going to get bored with me. The Holy Spirit is never going to say, okay, you know what? You know, I've had enough time with you. Like, right? So I just think that the beauty of this is that we're not telling students, you know, say these three sentences and this poem, and, you know, everything is going to, you're just going to skip along merrily along your way. What we're saying is life is hard. It's always going to be hard. It never is not hard. And so you might as well learn now how to really be invested in a relationship with Jesus in order that you can walk with Him and talk with Him. Yes, along life's merry way, but also in the valleys of loneliness and despair and challenge and frustration and failure that are going to come. And I think this is such an honest, it's so honest to tell young people this today instead of painting a picture of the future that is, you know, frankly, wonderful in terms of, you know, acknowledging that heaven is real. But heaven on earth is not where we quite live yet, right? The kingdom has not yet fully come.
Yeah, I don't want to candy coat anything. And so really what I wanted to do in the written form is kind of put my arm around you and guide you through this process and say, hey, number one, I get it. I was there. And number two, I've been doing this a long time. And so I understand the issues that you're wrestling with. Life is going to be full of wonderful things and incredibly difficult things. But let me help you to understand what that looks like in a healthy way that points you in the right direction towards Jesus, but also with lots of humor in it as well.
Yeah, I was going to say, you don't candy coat anything, but you coat everything with humor. Hey, Shelby Abbott is going to still be with me after the break. So let's take a quick break and then let's come back. Let's continue talking about pressure points. And specifically, we're going to hone in on the fear of missing out. That's next here on Mornings with Carmen. Talking now with Shelby Abbott, author of Pressure Points, A Guide to Navigating Student Stress. You can find Shelby online at Shelby Abbott. That's two B's and two T's. ShelbyAbbott.com. You can find him on Twitter and Instagram at Shelby Abbott. Also on Facebook, Shelby Abbott. And it's interesting to me, you know, an abbot is a father or an ecclesiastical title given to the head of a monastery in lots of different traditions, including Christianity. So I find it like wonderful that you, as Shelby Abbott, are pastoring people in what is really not monastic anymore, which is the college experience. But you are shepherding their hearts through this experience of transitioning from a place where they live in the context of their home with their parents, and then they're going to be making homes of their own and really be the not just the curators, but the creators of the culture that we all inhabit in the future. And so I find it wonderful that you are Abbott.
Yeah, thank you. That's one T, though, right?
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah, you're right. I don't know. You're an extra T. Okay, you're Abbott with an extra T.
Yeah, thanks.
We won't try to figure that part out. Okay, so let's get back to the book. The book is Pressure Points. Let's talk about specifically the fear of missing out, because I think that for college students who are Christians, when we start talking about, you know, making choices that are aligned with Christ and aligned with the will of God, there are going to be some spaces and places and activities that we intentionally do not participate in when we're in college. But that's going to be an immediate conflict with this fear of missing out. So just talk about that. For adults who don't know what FOMO is, what is it and how is it exacerbated by technology?
Yeah, I think it really was thrust to the forefront of culture when, like I said, when the iPhone came out, mostly because social media in general paints a kind of false picture of how people are actually living their lives. You can be really frustrated, upset, going through difficult times, but then post a picture that things are all great and hunky dory. And then when you post that, people automatically believe that your life is doing great. And as a result, there's this inevitable wish that I wish my life looked like that. I wish I had that kind of money. I wish I was in that environment with you. On top of the fact that now when it comes to live updates on things like Snapchat and Instagram stories, people can know that other people are doing things without you. And there's that constantly wondering of, why didn't they invite me to come out with them? Why don't I have friends that do the things that they do? And you feel like you're missing out on stuff, and inevitably causes this anxiety in our lives, in particular with students, that keeps skyrocketing over and over and over again. So we want to help people again to be content in their relationship with Jesus in a way that they can look at other things that are going on out there in the world and go, good for them, but be secure in their relationship with God.
Okay, and then let's talk specifically about dating. I think dating has really, here's one of my trouble spots, Shelby, is that dating seems actually detached today from the purposes for which God created courtship. And so dating seems to have lost some of its depth in terms of, you know, God's intent, in terms of preparation for that one lifelong relationship. And yet I know young people who they are having sex with people that they're not even dating. Like, there's this incredible culture shift that has taken place in relationship to relationships and how those are defined and where those take place and what those include. So in terms of your experience with college students, particularly those who are seeking to walk with Christ, give us a little insight into how hard that is today.
Yeah, dating is actually even one of those phrases or one of those words that people go, oh, that's something that my parents did. They they kind of casually move into it now on the whole, you know, stereotypically. And they kind of they call it, oh, we're not together. We're just hanging out. We're just, you know, we're just friends, but we like to do things together every now and then. There's not a whole lot of officialness to things. So I'd like to talk about the intentionality that you need to have. I mean, if you want to get a job, you don't go stand in the lobby of the building where the job or where the employer is and just kind of hope that someone walks up to you and offers you a job. You're intentional about it. You put your resume together. You set up an appointment. You put on nice clothes. You get freshened up and you're prepared for it. And that's just something is like a job. How much more important is a romantic relationship that could last you for the rest of your life instead of swiping right on a dating app or kind of casually text messaging someone, hey, you want to do something sometime? Why not be way more intentional about stuff? Because it communicates, hey, this is important and I value you as a person. So that's the game again changed with technology, with the iPhone when it came out, with when smartphones kind of became prolific. It really helps people to kind of be lazy about relationships. And what I talk about is trying to be intentional instead of just letting things kind of come to you, go after them in a very purposeful way that honors Jesus and brings glory to him. So I talk about, yeah, the physicality of modern romance as well and how we need to approach it from a godly perspective.
All right. I love it. I think it's timely. It is attentive both to the concerns of young people and their parents. And so let me encourage you to check out Pressure Points, A Guide to Navigating Student Stress. There's an excellent review of it posted today at thegospelcoalition.org. You can find the author, Shelby Abbott, at Shelby Abbott, that's two B's and two T's, .com. You can find him on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Shelby Abbott. Shelby, thanks so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me, Carmen.
All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to be back to wrap up the first hour of Mornings with Carmen. So here at the close of the first hour today on this Memorial Day, I'd just like to spend a couple of minutes reflecting on U.S. military families. Today is really the day that we best honor them. We remember publicly the sacrifice of the members of their family, but for military families who have given as a sacrifice for our country and our freedoms and the freedoms of others, they have actually given a member of their family. And I want you to consider just the depth of what they're experiencing today. And so find a way today to reach out to a military family. Certainly lift them up in prayer. Lift up the moms and the dads whose sons and daughters didn't come home. Lift up the kids whose daddies or mommies didn't come home. Lift up the grandmas and grandpas who, you know, this is just not the right order of things in so many ways. War is real and war is hell and life is precious and so is freedom. And so on this Memorial Day, let's just find particular ways to reach out to military families. Certainly, you know, go to parades, go visit military cemeteries today, pay your respects. Honor those who have given in a way that most of us will never give. Most American families will never make the kind of sacrifice that military families make. And so today's the day to honor the families of the fallen and to honor the brothers in arms of the fallen. The experience of Memorial Day for those on active duty and those who are veterans, I think, is a complicated day as well. And so let's just be mindful of that today as we walk the faith of Jesus Christ out into the world that he so loves. Let us do so in ways that honor memory and memorialize sacrifice and recognize that greater love has no one than this, that he laid down his life for his friends. You're listening to Mornings with Carmen. We'll be right back. Thanks for listening to this podcast of Mornings with Carmen LaBurge from Faith Radio. If you haven't, you can subscribe to automatically receive the podcast through iTunes or the Google Play Music app. That way, you never miss an episode. It's also available anytime at myfaithradio.com.